Hello, big boys and girls, parents and grandparents, and everyone interested in AI and robotics. I'm Anastasia with AI Snacks, with Romy and Robbie, a show for technology muggles, not wizards, together with my guests who are experts in artificial intelligence and robotics. I translate AI technologies from difficult to easy to understand. After having spent 30 years in different companies such as Munich Re, McKinsey, Deutsche Telekom, Qualcomm, then Dun & Bradstreet, I created AI Edutainment, a company democratizing knowledge of AI and robotics with children and their clever parents and grandparents. Today, I am joined in studio by Florin Rota. He's a wonderful AI practitioner and a chief AI officer at Avanade, a visionary leader in digital transformation with a career spanning over two decades in technology industry. And Florin is a member of the prestigious Forbes Technology Council. He co-authored a book, We the People, Human Purpose in the Digital Age. And then he co-authored another book, which is a very recent publication, and it's called The Handbook for Chief AI Officers, Leading the AI Revolution in Business. And this very book serves as an official study guide approved by the World Digital Technology Academy for its certification program for chief AI officers. And in today's podcast, I would love to explore what it takes to introduce AI in a business. And I would like to be very practical about it. So no PowerPoints. So Florin, welcome. I'm really thrilled. And before we start talking AI misconceptions and implementation, could you please talk about yourself, emphasizing 2 to 3 pivotal moments which led you to where you are today?
Sure. Hi, Anastasia. First of all, thank you so much for inviting me. Pleasure and honor to be here. So, I've had a twisty road on the journey with AI. I've always been sort of a math person, a science, you know, engineering person, and I got interested in something called neural networks when I was at university 3 decades ago. And I mean, at that point in time, neural networks were a very esoterical and theoretical exercise, largely going out of fashion. And I remember my professor encouraging me to, okay, you might not want to spend too much time on that if you want to get a job. It's a recession out there, as it was in the mid 90s. But you know, lucky for me, I didn't quite listen to him entirely. So I did study a bit of AI, neural networks. For those of you who are not familiar, it's some of the basic concepts behind generative AI today. So it's kind of funny to see technology finally coming of age and being usable and useful, hopefully useful. Well, I'm sure we'll come back to that later on. But yeah, I've always been interested in technology, AI, math, but I also have a very, very strong passion for people, and really strongly believe that AI should be done in the service of people, with people, not to people. So having this duality of technology and math and AI on one side of the equation, but then a very strong ethos for ethical, responsible usage of technology in a way which builds societies and services humankind is something which has formed me, I think.
Thank you for this answer. And Florin, I'm just curious, what surprised you in the past maybe 5 years in the development of AI and robotics?
I mean, it's moving extraordinarily fast. It's not new though. I mean,
yeah.
AI is a field which has existed for decades and decades. Actually, you know, even before I was born in the 70s. And I think we all stand on the shoulders of giants. This is not something which has suddenly exploded into being, although it might seem like it, if you're not in the industry. But I think maybe there are two things which have surprised me. So one is the power of what I would call exponential phenomenon. An exponential phenomenon is when technology moves so quickly and the equation on benefit and cost and value improves radically and exponentially. And that really, really triggers changes to society, changes to the world. It doesn't happen very often. It's maybe happened twice in the last 60, 70 years. And it really is amazing to see what happens when, you know, the cost goes down by a factor of 10 and the performance improves by a factor of 10 in a year alone. So that really, really changes things. And maybe we'll get a chance to double click into that. But the other thing which really surprised me, maybe not, is the importance again of people to succeed with AI. So in my previous role, I used to be the chief technology officer, obviously very focused on technology, but I am focusing 80% of my time now on people-related topics, how to think about AI as a force for good, how to use AI as a means of empowering people to become the best versions of themselves, not to fear AI or to feel threatened by it. And the amount of effort required on the people front and the fact that people are actually the main predictor for success with AI and actually the biggest challenge and the biggest opportunity. It's not the technology, it's the people side. That surprises me still.
You know, when I listened to you and I was kind of, you know, reflecting on this age of AI, it's not a new technology or technology family. So I am currently recording a course with of AI snacks. So I record a video a day, and this is usually in between of 120 to 180 seconds, where I talk about one or another algorithm or historical event and blah, blah, blah. And I was recording yesterday about Alan Turing and the very first machine playing chess. And I mean, we are talking the first chess match between a human and AI in 1952. And every single move took 30 minutes. And Alan Turing was actually calculating within the match to help the machine, because there was no compute back then available to make this complex program run with sufficient computing resources. And then, you know, if we think like 2 years ago and Gemini, where engineers prompted and suggested certain qualities and values to the historical data set, and out of sudden we received black founders, founding fathers of the United States, right? So human intervention and machines, how do you think about it in the context of an enterprise?
A really, really big question. I think that humans need to have ultimate accountability and responsibility for everything which happens with AI now and for the foreseeable future. I think, you know, it's a basic tenet of what I think responsible AI usage should be. The fact that it needs to be explainable, it needs to be reliable, it needs to be serving a good purpose, not just, you know, technology for the sake of technology, or just for, you know, the sake of producing more garbage content on the internet. By the way, you know, that is unfortunately happening, and we're seeing a dumbing down risk of you know, machines creating what's called synthetic data, which then is in its turn used by machines to train themselves, and we're getting a sort of a spiral degeneration. I call it degenerative AI, not generative AI. I think, you know, humans have a really, really big a big role to play. But I also think we need to be open-minded around how fast the technology is moving. So, you know, it's kind of funny you mentioned the Turing, you know, chess experiments from all the way back then. I mean, today, one of the flagship, you know, Gen AI models has maybe a trillion nodes. That's more, you know, to some extent, in some ways of looking at it, bigger than the human brain. Yeah. Those things are doing something like one followed by 27, 28 zeros of calculation per second. One followed by 27 or 28 zeros calculations per second. I don't think we as, you know, we even have a comprehension of how big of a number that is. I mean, and just to give you, you know, pardon my little detour, but just to give you an explanation which I use with my kids around, you know, how big is that? Well, imagine a cube of sand and how many corns of sand you have in that cube. Well, depends on how big the cube is. Imagine if that cube is several thousand miles.
Yeah.
And imagine the number of the sand corns you'd have in that cube. That is sort of gives you an indication of what one followed by 27, 28 zeros are. Or another way of looking at it is the sum of total DNA nucleotides which have existed in all the history of human race.
Yeah.
Again, one followed by 27 zeros is larger than that. So per second. So when you have that amount of computing power, you know, something pretty impressive happens, but it's not human. And we as humans really, really, in my opinion, have the responsibility, a very important responsibility, not to give away the rights and the authority and the control over this, and to just expect that, you know, unicorns fly through the air and magic rainbows appear just because it's, you know, generative AI.
Yeah, no, I can't agree more. And I wonder, just listening to you, obviously Gen AI is a subset of deep learning, which is a very old technology, right?
Yeah.
And in deep learning models, there are two abilities of those models. The first one is memorize. And obviously in the history, in the past 20 years, there were breakthroughs because out of sudden, one lab or one company achieved that this memory was increased. And then there's another capability, and this the ability to generalize. And current AIs are struggling with generalization. So when Yuval Harari is writing that AI hacked the language, well, I mean, we must use human words to describe what AI is doing, but AI isn't processing language. It's statistically processing a token stream, and token is not a word. It's maybe a two-third of an English word. So how do you think about today's architectures and maybe what must happen to improve this generalization ability, which might lead, and question mark, I do not know, to a more transparent and beneficial AI?
Yeah, it's a great question, Anastasia. And I think, you know, I mean, we're recording this session in end of October 24. and things move incredibly fast, right? So, you know, maybe come end of 2025, what I'm about to say might sound silly or outdated, but I'll give you my best attempt at it. And I think there are two ways to look at this. So one is, there seems to be promising developments with what's called reasoning AI, where more time is being spent by the models during the inference, i.e. the runtime, versus the training. And that, you know, if the promise holds, would give us AI, which is basically able to take long, you know, more complicated problems and to break them down into sub-problems, potentially to reason top of those sub-problems within certain human-defined parameters, and to take actions and basically to, you know, almost bring together the capability of experts in different fields, whether you're a PhD in biology or math or physics or economics or whatever, and to have higher level of accuracy and to tackle more difficult problems. I mean, if this is the case, this would be amazing because, again, we would take a leapfrog forwards in terms of using AI to solve humanity's biggest challenges. Now, there is a counter argument which is raging in the media right now and among scientists that actually this is not really the case. And, you know, even reasoning AI, it's still largely a, you know, deterministic, sorry, not deterministic, a probabilistic engine, which is just, you know, quite fragile at the end, which is quite fragile at the end of the day. We'll see. Yeah. I think this debate will be settled in over the next few months. Now, to come back to the real world of businesses and where I spend my time, I'm not a futurologist by any stretch of the imagination. Where I see a lot of value is when generative AI is used on closed sets of data, which have been very thoroughly verified for quality. And the models are being fine-tuned or even trained for very, very specific purposes. And this purpose might be, you know, helping to accelerate the our approach to writing computer code, or in the areas of material sciences or chemistry or energy tech or agricultural technology. So, you know, not necessarily yet another chatbot for customer service, reasoning on, you know, all the good and the bad data on the internet, but being fine-tuned for very, very specific purposes on very high quality data sets. And that's where there is very real, very tangible, substantial benefit to be had.
And the Nobel Prize Committee this year actually acknowledged the role of AI in science. And there were two Nobel Prizes awarded to those scientists who are utilizing AI in everything they do. Mm. So for chemistry and for physics. But if we go into the realm of real businesses, and you kind of, you know, think in front of your mental eye, because you write books and obviously you sit on a couple of boards and advisory boards, and you review what your peers are telling you. The degree of maturity around AI is very different probably from one industry into another, right? And what are the leading cutting edge industries in deploying AI in your eyes?
I think the technology industry is kind of obvious because, you know, it's basically disrupting itself. The ability to really modernize legacy technology debt, is very real. This has happened, by the way, in all industries.
Yeah.
But tech is one of those. I think the legal profession is moving quite fast with this. Media and entertainment, to some extent, financial services. But I mean, to be honest, the breakthroughs and the fundamentally industry-changing examples I have seen are in all kinds of industries. It might very well be, you know, the biotech, which is using data from post-mortem brains to figure out potential new treatments to Alzheimer's or schizophrenia, or the car manufacturer, which is using generative AI in engineering to dramatically reduce the time to market for creating new car models from 6 years to a year and a half, or the oil company, which needs to maintain super complex refineries and oil installations with millions and millions of parts, which constantly break, which needs very sophisticated knowledge management to be able to diagnose failures and to know how to fix failures, even when the stakes are extraordinarily high and, you know, you might have an explosion if something goes wrong and you make a mistake. So it's not quite as easy to say one industry is ahead of the other. I think to me it's more... it's more to do with the leadership maturity of a specific organization and their attitude to it. I think, you know, there is a risk right now. It's more than a risk. It's happening. A lot of organizations are overestimating the short-term impact of AI and expecting magic to happen with, you know, just because of a chatbot, but at the same time, fundamentally underestimating the midterm and the long-term impact. And it depends on, again, the organizational leadership maturity and ambition on this.
I absolutely love it. And I'm always saying we might be technologists, but we are all in people's business. And I'm just willing to bridge into your role. So you were a CTO, and you moved into a chief AI officer role. And if I am a completely novel person to this world, and I am just asking you, what is it? What are you doing the whole day, and what are your peers doing? So how would you define this role in maybe 3 to 4 sentences?
It actually depends on, and I hate saying it depends because it sounds so cheesy and you know, it's a platitude. But the role is still in its infancy in many organizations, and organizations tend to implement it differently. So some organizations are very focused on the data element. Some are more focused on the model element, like the generative AI models. In my experience, as I briefly alluded to before, the make or break dimension is the people side and the business value of this. So where I spend a lot of my time is making sure that we are very precise and deliberate and focused on where, and more importantly, why we're using AI. What impact it has on strategically on the business performance, whether it's revenue growth or profitability improvements or faster time to market or differentiation or what have you, or employee satisfaction. But then a really big part of my role is organizational readiness and making sure that, again, people feel that AI is not happening to them, but with them, that it is a capability which helps them to personally and professionally reach new heights, to do things they wouldn't have imagined they would be able to do before. and they don't feel threatened by AI, or they don't ridicule AI or ignore it. It is a trio of technology, of business and people, with a big emphasis on business and people for us right now and for me right now.
And if we try to translate this into a kind of a roadmap for an organization which understands the importance of data, is clear about its business competitive strategy, and wants to review in what pieces of the business AI might contribute to, let's say, a leaner bottom line and to more growth. So what would be your very practical advice on what to do first, second, third, how to address talent, vendors, all the landscape, and what it takes to implement AI and be practical about it?
I think it depends on, again, where their maturity. But one thing I would say, be very clear where you're going and why. Because if you don't know where you're going, every road would take you somewhere, and we'll take you there. Be very clear on why you're trying to do this. A lot of organizations start in scenarios which are focused on productivity or efficiency gains, and there is value to be had in that. In my experience, the real fundamental value is in scenarios which drive growth.
Yeah.
Sales growth, revenue growth, people growth. So finding that right balance between operational efficiency and growth is an important aspect. I think another aspect is to be very clear on the mix you would have as an organization between where you're looking to leverage AI, which has been built by somebody else, because pretty much every single vendor, every single technology platform is starting to have AI built into it. Not all of it is good, but generally there are billions and billions of investments which are going into it. And so consuming AI for the right purpose in the right scenario could be a good thing. Customizing AI for your specific needs and situation and with your own data is quite common. And then create AI is increasingly becoming feasible for a lot of organizations. So having this balance between consume, customize, create is important, as is making the right bets on the ecosystems and the partnership, because it's very fast changing. And you really, really need to make sure you team with the right people and the right organizations. And last but not least, maybe actually it is the number one bit is training.
Yes.
We made a very conscious effort to create something called the School of AI, which we made available to all of our 65,000 people. It's been one of the most appreciated initiatives in the company's history. And again, it's seeking to make people part of the journey, to give them some of the new computer literacy skills they would need to be efficient and effective in this new world. The same way that, we take for granted that people know how to browse the internet or write an email today, the same way, working with AI requires a new skill and a new mindset. Unfortunately, I should say, because it should be AI adjusting to people rather than the other way around. But, we are where we are. So training, I would maybe even start with that. Training, business-why, technology ecosystem, and having the right balance of on the technology side, on consume, customize, create.
I could talk with you for hours, but I would like to come to the conclusion of this podcast and ask you about the balance of the return and all those benefits and great prospects, and then the risks. So and you are very conscious about risks in digital technologies. So what are the major buckets of AI risk you're thinking about on a daily basis? And what are like immediate risks and what might come, let's say, 3 to 4 years from now?
Well, 3 to 4 years is a very long time.
Today, yes.
So if I approach this from a business leadership perspective first, and then I'll approach it from a people perspective. So to me, it seems like we're almost into the equivalent of 1997 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
There is something big happening. There is a non-trivial amount of hype around it. Some ridicule it. Some make, you know, serious investments in it. Some, most are in between. And if you remember what happened in, you know, back then, you know, there were loads of organizations which decided to, you know, create a .com to put some of their corporate brochures on the web, maybe list you know, the address of their branches or stores and said, hey, we're a .com company now and everything will be well. And clearly, you know, there were a lot of companies and industries which got disrupted. But then again, there were also companies which were ahead of their time, like, you know, boo.com or Webvan or what have you, which had significant bets which still failed because the technology wasn't quite ready. And for me, we are at the technology is moving incredibly fast, but we're still at a maturity level, which is, you know, a bit of the equivalent of dial-up modem and AOL for those of you in the States. But it's going to change very, very fast. So I think as a business, you've got to be really sage of knowing, finding this right balance of, you know, just because you're releasing a, you know, a chatbot and you're doing a pilot and a prototype, that's the equivalent of, you know, putting your brochure where on the internet back in 1997. That's not going to make, add a lot of value. But finding the right why and doing it in a conscious way is really, really important. And I think this is an existential risk to companies. I'm willing to make, you know, to eat my hat if I would be wearing a hat that, you know, in a few years' time, people will look back and say 2024, 2025 is the year that the next generation of titans are being born or pivoting the same way that, you know, in the late 90s and the early 2000s, we saw the birth of Netflix and Amazon and Google and what have you, loads of companies which, you know, disrupted industries. Same is happening now. It's just not clear to everybody. On the people side, I think it is so important not to fear this, but it's also important not to ridicule it. And in my experience, there is a shift which happens with a lot of people when something, you know, when AI is not good enough and you try whatever, a copilot or whatever, and it doesn't give you the result you want, and people have the reaction of, ha, I knew it. This thing is kind of stupid. It's not good enough. And you feel relief or you give up or you ridicule it. When you pass that threshold and you actually see this is an opportunity for you to lean in, to learn more, to figure out how to use this tool to your benefit, that's when you have that mental mind shift of not fearing AI, but actually leaning in and learning how to use it to help you as an individual and your professional career and your personal life. And I think the risk right now I'm seeing is that, you know, again, there is overhyped expectations. There are loads of funky demos which look good when it's a demo, but it doesn't work in real life. And therefore, people, too many people give up or ignore or get frustrated. And I think that is a risk because this thing is not going away.
Yes.
It will get better. It will get more powerful. And I am afraid for those of us who, you know, do not seize this opportunity to upskill themselves, to lean in, to get the skills, to experiment, and to make sure that they reimagine their, you know, their capabilities, their jobs. Tasks will get automated, jobs will get reinvented. So, you know, leaning on this would be my advice. Don't risk standing on the sidelines and wait and do a wait and see, because that would be too late when it's obvious.
And I think this is a fabulous advice to conclude this episode of AI Snacks with Rom and Robbie. And I would like to kindly ask my audience to support this show by buying the first volume of the Robbie and Robbie series on Amazon. And this is Robbie and the Secrets of Sleep, a book dedicated to quantum computing hardware. And there are plenty of discussions on what implies intelligence, consciousness, and all kind of AI technologies, including GenAI and Transformers. I'm very, very grateful to Florian. Thank you so much for your time. And I hope that everyone had fun listening to this. Stay safe and healthy. Goodbye and see you next week.